irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Ilona Europa, Accent On, every Monday for 5 years. I'm in this chair. Chair is mine. I love my chair. And I love the weather today. Oh my gosh, California. I hate heat. I'm living in California for so many years, but now we are in heaven. And today in a studio, I hope everybody will agree with me. The temperature will be scoring, very, very hot. We'll be talking a little bit politics, which is crazy. Mostly we don't talk about politics on Accent On, but we'll be really retouching this topic because we'll be talking about music, songwriting, and songs and politics. And in studio we have my friend Mike Gormley, who has his segment on Accent On for a few months, and Mike Gormley is bringing very, very interesting guests, and today is one of those Mondays. Yes, Mike?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me by this week.
Of course. Okay, I don't know even, because I already want to talk too much, you know me, I like to talk, but I really will let you lead this interview, and then I'll stick my 5 seconds here and there.
I hope so.
Okay, then could you introduce us to your guest, and another guest will be calling in, yes?
Right.
But let's maybe, for the first, introduce our guest in the studio.
Yes, his name is Paul Zolo. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Mike. Nice to see
Hello,
you.
Hello, Paul.
Hello.
I just found out that Paul is Polish. Yes.
Proudly.
Now he's part of Accent On, officially.
Yeah, member of the family right away.
Yes, and you are Canadian. Find some accent, Mike, for us. Any. Yo.
There's a little accent.
I think so.
I'm told every once in a while there's a Canadian accent that sneaks through, but I've been here for like 3 decades.
So yeah, I know.
What are you going to do?
Okay, and yes, then we have this interesting, very interesting topic. We have amazing book that you are holding in your hands, mm-hmm. which we'll be talking about with Paul Rode. And
how
it's not
pages?
Number one. He's like, yes, how many pages?
Just under 700.
Just under 700 pages, and that's part two.
Are we calling this Bible?
It is. It's called Songwriters on Songwriting, and it's actually called More Songwriters on Songwriting, the one I have here, and the original one. Songwriters on Songwriting came out how long ago? About 10 years?
The original came out 25 years
ago. That long
ago. We've expanded it four times.
Wow.
And we couldn't expand it anymore. It was bigger than this one. And so I started on the sequel, which I've been working on for several years, and now it's here.
So expanded, just more interviews? And it became is a textbook, right?
Yeah, which is wonderful. I'm so happy about that because as we were talking earlier, when I grew up, I wanted to be a songwriter. You couldn't study songwriting in a college, especially any traditional music school. I went to Boston University, and I could study composition and instrumentation, but not songwriting. Now you can, and USC started and all over, and they started using the original Songwriters on Songwriting as a textbook, which I'm really happy about because it does serve that purpose, not intentionally, but all these people are talking directly about how you write a great song or how you write a song. How you keep writing songs, how you stay engaged with songwriting, every kind of aspect of the process and the art and the craft of songwriting. And these people are all experts and geniuses at it and so rarely get to really talk about the craft aspects of it, which they're so great at.
Yeah.
So it's been a fun journey to do both books, and I'm really happy that students have discovered it.
I get so jealous when I hear what classes are available now. You know, because when I was started out as a musician. I was playing drums, and I loved music, and I would have taken it on in a bigger way had I just had some idea that there were other teachers out there. I'd get private teachers and so on. But I was playing mainly by ear, and but songwriting interested me from age 11, and if someone had been around, I might have learned more about it and taken it on. Who knows? But I get jealous because a lot of the younger people today have so many schools available to them to learn not only about songwriting, but production and not just the music, but the music business itself. I had a class at UCLA that was a music business class.
Yeah, so which was really helpful. When I started, I didn't have a clue how the business worked. And as you know, it's a confusing business.
Yeah.
And if you know, you need help to understand it. So, students nowadays are in better shape when they're starting in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you are giving students the tool. They can read your books. They can read interviews with amazing songwriters, so successful. We'll be talking, Mike will probably, and you give us some amazing names that everybody knows it. But really, after interviewing so many great people, do you think we can have this perfect understanding? What is the hit? What is the perfect song? There's so many genres of the song, so many ways that you can write a song. Is this one way?
Definitely not one way. I think that's the main answer. There is no one way to write a great song. And, you know, what constitutes a great song? To me, if a song lasts for years, that's a sign of a great song. If it has meaning in people's lives, it's one thing if we love it now and it's perfect for now, that's great. But four years from now, 10 years, 30 years, that's the sign of something really special and kind of miraculous and kind of magic. But there's no trick to that magic. And not one of these people I've spoken to, from early writers like Sammy Kahn, who wrote for Sinatra, through Paul Anka, through Dylan, you know, through Beyond, not one of them said, okay, this is how you write a great song. Here's the trick. Because there is no trick. There's no secret to it.
Thank you.
It's hard work and it's dedication over a lifetime. And a few of these songwriters wrote just genius songs immediately, but that's very unusual. Almost all of them spent years writing songs before they started to write a great one.
And of course, I'm sure after talking to these great people, they will tell you that when they write, they really don't know which one the people will fall in love with.
That's right. And so many times people will be pressured to write something and they're working hard. Like Sarah Bareilles told me this. They were telling her to write a hit, and she didn't want to, and so she wrote Love Song as a reaction, like, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do this. Same thing with Amy Winehouse with Rehab.
Wow.
That was just a joke. She was working really hard to come up with this album with Mark, I lost his name there for a moment. Well, it'll come back to me. Well, with his Mark Ronson, her producer. And she just was singing, They Want Me to Go to Rehab, while they were walking down the street as a joke. And he said, make a song out of that. And she said, no, it's just a joke. So sometimes the great songs, the songs that become the famous ones, are ones that kind of come to you from sideways.
Some of them are you know, you got 20 minutes left in the studio, you might as well fill it.
Exactly.
And that's the one that but you know, I think that connects to simplicity.
Yes.
Maybe you put some music down because it's not intricate and not, you know, worked out or great arrangement, but sometimes just the simplicity allows it to come across to people easier than others might.
Absolutely, and the song is a short form, and simplicity is important. If you have every great song, in some ways, has some simplicity where you can get the melody and you know, the title maybe and the meaning of it, but then tweaks that in some ways, so it's taking you on a new journey.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely. Jeff Berry, who's in the new book, he was writing songs, you know, with Brill Building writers, Berry and Greenwich. Ellie Greenwich was his wife and partner. Same time Goffin and King and Neil Sedaka and all those people were writing. And they were writing for themselves, and they did have 3 hours left in the studio, so they wrote Hanky Panky just for fun. And like just wrote it and recorded it like that. And it was a great song. They don't consider it a great song, but then it became a hit for Tommy James and the Shondells.
Right. It wasn't a great song.
But, you know, it's pretty good, though. You know, hey, it's good melody.
Maybe now. I remember when it first came out,
it's not Bridge Over Troubled Water, mind you. But,
and there's quite a story about why that song became a hit. It was a little maneuvering going on behind the scenes. But nevertheless, it gave him a career.
There's a lot with Tommy James and the Shondells, that band.
Do you think
the beauty of the music business.
Can you make listeners to fall in love with the song even when they don't want to? Can you buy love? I don't think so. I really think no. That would be my saying. Sometimes people put so much money on
that has been a conventional wisdom, that if the people will hear a certain song enough, Yeah. They'll get used to it and maybe start to love it. And some songs require several listenings. They'll never get discovered without repeated listening. That is kind of the beauty of a song. It's designed for that. It's designed for being heard many times, not just once. So there is some wisdom to that. The song gets exposure. At least it has a chance for that. But I don't know if you could get people to actually like something that's not good at all.
Yeah.
But sometimes something very lightweight, what we might consider pretty lightweight, not sophisticated, can be a big hit. Sometimes that's what you need. You know, a lightweight pop record can be really great at certain times.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite records is an instrumental, which is Green Onions, Booker T. And that literally was, we have 20 minutes in the studio.
Oh, is that right?
And they just jammed. And they came up with to this day, it just feels good, you know. No lyrics on that particular one, but...
Wow. Modern songwriters don't get that. They'll spend 4 years working on one track, trying different loops.
Yes,
Merle Haggard told me with Mama Tried and two other songs, they had 3 hours at Capitol Records. So they waited in the nearest diner until, it was almost time, then loaded in their stuff as fast as they could, did 3 songs in 3 hours, and were out of there. and that was a classic record,
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different way of recording than we know.
Is it too intricate now, you think? Is it just you're not able to do stuff like that? Is it too planned and too big, maybe?
In some ways, that there are endless options when you're working with digital recording. In some ways, that can hang people up. But I think a lot of people are coming around to understanding that still, if you capture a live performance, you can use digital recording and still capture a live performance and, not belabor it forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dylan's the king of that. We're still doing that. He's using digital recording, but he's still recording in that old-fashioned way.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. I hadn't mentioned you've got 8 books under your belt. We're talking about the songwriting books, but there are other books that you've been writing, and we haven't even, and hopefully we'll get to your life as a journalist, your life as a photographer, and I love your photography.
Thank you.
I enjoy it when I see it mainly on Facebook. You did one the other day from the studio mentioning you were coming here. That was this great shot, and it looked like Booker T. You kind of turned around, took the picture, and turned back again. I mean, you didn't study it a lot, but it came out, the brilliance came out.
Nice, thank you.
Yeah, really
is this
nice.
Because of your eye? Songwriters have this it when they produce, and the photographer need to have this certain it to capture the certain it that they want us to see through their eyes, because this is art form. And, we have iPhones, and people right now shooting movies with the iPhone. They can also deliver beautiful things, and capture great pictures on iPhone. But you are probably shooting with Nikon. What are you using? What type of...
I was generally using a Canon, a regular camera, but digital. But a lot of these are phone photos. I got to say, you can take really good pictures. And that one that you just mentioned was... I used to think, no, it's not really a photo. But it is.
It is,
I think, in songs, you're telling stories with pictures. And you do that with photographs, and it's fun, too. And any artist likes to put your work out into the world. And there used to be such a delay with photographs. You'd take them, and you'd get them developed. Then you'd get the prints and the proof sheets, and maybe you'd show them to someone eventually. This is so immediate. So it is kind of thrilling to do a photo and immediately put it out, and my friend in England is looking at it. I find that kind of thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
I was just mentioning to Mike that I'm trying to download 20,000 photos from iPhone to my cloud, which we have, and then to take to hard drive. Takes so much time that right now it's almost not worth it to make so many photos. How do you deal with your art to knowing that they will not disappear? Are you very organized? Knowing, I see your book, you're very organized when it comes to interviews and your thoughts, this and being a journalist. But art, it's after a while you go back, I hate this. After a year, no, that's really not art. Are you erasing? Well, because it's so easy to push delete and it's over.
With the phone photos, it gets out of control. But with art itself and with songwriting, I find it's the one place in my life I can be perfectly organized and get it exactly right.
How you want.
And with a record, too. And that's so rare in life. And you just get it exactly like you want. If there's any part you don't like, you change that part. Wow. And I like the revision of it. I don't usually write a song in a few minutes like we were talking about.
Yeah.
I'm the kind that will spend a long time to get it right.
And rewrite. It's like, and as a journalist, writing a story, if not a song, then a story, it's rewrite and rewrite. Every time,
absolutely.
Every time you go over it, you improve it. At some point, you have to say, done.
Right.
But sometimes that's difficult. But every yes. time you go back and rewrite something, you find another phrase, another word, another whatever, and it's.
And I find I revised music writing certainly, but the song is a whole other form of revision where it takes a while to really discover what's there. Whereas in the music journalism, I can pretty much impose what I want to be there. I am finding stuff, discovering language while writing it, but songs is a whole other place. And especially collaborating, as you know, I've been working with Daryl Purpose, who you've been
yes,
working with.
We had him on our show also. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His album, wonderful.
Well, Daryl is just a genius melody writer. And so we wrote all these songs for his last album, Still the Birds, together, and I was writing the lyrics. And he's singing them, and he's very clear about it. If it's not something he's comfortable singing, there were some songs I wrote, he just didn't want them at all, but others, he gave me like, yeah, that's really great, but, and so he required a lot of revision and yet had the patience to wait till we got it right, and I admired that.
You got it right, too, though, but some great songs on that album.
Thank you.
Great songs.
I agree, and I got to say, it's because he's a great melody writer. I can write a very dark lyric, like we have this song Baltimore about Edgar Allan Poe and the mystery of his death. Could be a pretty laborious kind of strange song, but Daryl gave it a real kind of great melody. Yep. It's almost catchy. It is catchy. So it makes it work. So he brings those lyrics to life in such a great way.
You know, we've got a lot of music tonight.
Yes, we have 6:15, 6:16. I'm waiting because
we're going to get one phone call. Why don't we play Paul's song that he recorded with Art Garfunkel?
Okay, then we are... We're being in the...
Being in this world.
Yes. Then if Carol will call, I will pick up the phone and then we can, after
can
conversation...
Can she hold, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah, no. Then, but I can...
Okay, well, you deal with it. Well, whatever.
Let's know.
We have a song of Paul's we need to debut, so we got to get it in there somewhere.
Then first being in this world, and I think
and
we need to
And this is Paul Zolo and Art Garfunkel.
I want to know more about this song and when... Okay.
His father at the factory. He dreams of playing in the major leagues. It is 1933. His eyes are Virgin Mary blue. He walks along Arapahoe. The snow is falling all around. He's pitching to DiMaggio. Being in this world. Being in this world. Being in this world. Father walked the earth all along the railroad track to sharpen knives from town to town. Whetstone wheels strapped to his back, walnuts in his wrinkled hands, fish lures in his crumpled hat. Pockets all full of sunflower seeds. He was happier with no more than that. To be being in this world. Being in this world. Being in this world.
Everybody. It takes dreams and prayers and wine
come home drunk again. They shared each other's company, just like a burrow and a hen. His father breaking plates again, his mother quiet in the dark, while all the sons are fishermen. Wait for his day at Fenway Park. Being in this world, 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 being in this
perfect timing. We just finished to listen to wonderful Song of Paul, and now we have Carol on the phone. Hello.
Hello.
Well, this is Ilona.
I'm here.
Ilona Europa Accent On, and Mike Gormley is with us in the studio.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike.
It's Carol Welsman on the phone. And Carol is Canadian, I think I'd point out. A jazz singer and pianist, and with a new album out. And I want to ask you, we don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to, you did the most interesting thing. The album's called For You. How long has it been out?
It came out on September 1st.
Oh, good. And you had fans pick the songs. Is that accurate?
Yes, actually, we did a contest on Facebook, like a voting contest on social media, and because we had 23 songs to choose from, and my publicist came up with this wonderful idea. She said, why don't we, Cheryl Foyer's doing it, she said, why don't we just put it up and ask the fans to vote for 15 of the 23 tracks? And that's exactly what we did, and we got an amazing response, and they voted for the 15 tracks, and those are the tracks that got on the album.
It's a good thing you agreed with them.
Well, yes.
It's true. I actually did agree with them, and they were all the same ones I chose, so I was thrilled.
Fantastic.
And what you will do with the next 10 that they didn't choose?
Well, we've got 8 left or so. Well, I chose one of my own my own favorites for the 16th track, so we've got 7 left, and we are planning on releasing them over time as bonus tracks for different initiatives that we have. So it's a really fun idea. And all the fans who voted became executive producers, and they have their names printed in the liner notes of the CD. So people are buying them, and the executive producers actually have their names in there. So it's fun.
Very good.
You're from Toronto, correct? Is that correct?
I am, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I'm from Ottawa, by the way.
I'm from Poland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I am from Poland.
Yeah, right.
But
also... an international group.
That's why it's called Accent On.
Yes, and we have in the studio with us Paul Zolo, who, of course, writes amazing books about songwritings. And we were talking about, you know, what does this mean to write the perfect song? Is this something that people listen and right away know that they want to listen more or hear more? And now you are answering my question, because you say that people really decided that's what they want to hear over and over. Then maybe we need to listen to people we know and let them listen to our songs and choose for us what is the best for our music.
You're right. It's such a wonderful concept.
Yeah. And I have beautiful song of yours. Your voice is just out of this world. I don't know, your alto, contralto, where did you get this voice from?
Where'd you find
well,
that?
I didn't buy it.
Luckily, oh, no. Must be mama.
I guess I have to thank God for it, because I was blessed with a musical talent, and I'm really glad that I've been able to, you know, lend the best of my abilities to these beautiful songs. Of course, I didn't write them. These are American songbook songs, but the it was very interesting to see what people felt like, for example, the top three songs. I would never have known that they would choose these songs as their top three.
Congratulations. And I know that you are pairing your music with politics a little bit. You are having event that is directed to help your husband, yes, to be elected.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. He's running for U.S. Senate for California, and it's very exciting. His name is Pat Harris, and his website is patharrisforsenate.com. And he and I are pairing up on September the 25th at Catalina's Jazz Club here in Los Angeles to do a CD release event to promote, of course, the release of For You, the album, but with all proceeds to go to Pat's campaign. And he will get up and speak and let the fans know exactly what he stands for, which is wonderful, wonderful things, especially given our political climate now.
Yeah, it would be very interesting one day to have both of you in our studio and just talk music and politics and special marriage. Oh my gosh.
Do they mix?
Does the
music and politics mix?
I don't know. Well, but I do know that I personally stand for all the things that Pat stands for, and he's running as a progressive Democrat, and I guess being Canadian and being from the land where we have Medicare for all and wonderful things for the people, I certainly stand behind him in this regard, and I think that the fun thing is that everybody loves music, and I think that music's going to bring everybody together for this and to make them all realize that we have we've come a long way in this state of California, and we just need to go that much further.
Wonderful. Well, I really, really, I would love to have you and your husband, if he has time, and you also, to come to LA Talk Radio and just talk on this topic. Yes, I am from Poland. I can talk also about free education and free healthcare and da-da-da-da. I am progressive Democrat, looks like, in this situation.
That's wonderful.
We can help maybe to elect your husband and, of course, your album first and foremost. We would love people to fall in love with your new album.
Is he officially announced?
He is officially announced, yes.
Oh,
it's
good.
Very exciting.
Oh.
And not very many candidates have announced, and he's not as well known as the other candidates, but that's all the better, I think, because he has a lot of power behind his message, and I think it's just time for a change. And I think that... hopefully our event on the 25th of September at Catalina's will prove to help him become better known, and also to spread the good word about the music, because that's what I love.
And the event on September 25th is fairly early. It's like 6:30 or 7, isn't it? Something like that?
It's 7 o'clock, and the show starts at 8:30,
okay.
And we will have a mixture of the two things. We'll have Pat come and speak for a short while and show a couple of videos, and then we'll also be... I'm grateful that I have a triple Grammy-nominated Denise Donatelli, who's coming to sing with me and our band, and Louis Cruz Beltran, who is a fantastic percussionist and singer. He's going to also be a special guest. So there's a lot of wonderful music to be heard that night.
And you have Corky Hall on your recording. Will Corky Hall be there?
Actually, Corky's not available to be there, unfortunately, but she sends her her best wishes to everybody, and we will be doing an event soon as a duet, the two jazz pianos, the dueling jazz pianos. Oh, so stay tuned.
Yeah, let us know, you know, any other dates coming up. We'll pass on the word, and but we have some of your music now. I think that's going to be a highlight. Which track do we have?
Skylark.
Oh, Skylark.
Yes,
okay.
Carol Waldman. Thank you so much for calling in. We will be listening to your gorgeous voice. Oh my God, so beautiful, so low. It's not so many altos like that in this world. And congratulations, and good luck with your event.
Thank you so much for all your great promotion, and I love that song. It was my mother's favorite song, so it's been, and it was the number one song on the album and number one voted. So thank you so much for playing it.
Fantastic. Our pleasure, and thanks so much for calling in, and we'll get to meet you someday, I hope.
Yes.
I really hope so, too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Skylark, have you anything to say to me? Won't you tell me where my love may be? Is there a meadow in the mist where someone's waiting to be kissed? Skylark, have you seen a valley green with spring where my heart can go a journeying over the shadows and the rain to a blossom covered lane? And in your lonely flight, haven't you heard the music in the night? Wonderful music, faint as a will-o'-the-wisp, crazy as a loon, sad as a gypsy serenading the moon. I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them anywhere, won't you lead me?
I feel like we're doing a late night show and we talk very softly.
Love it, love it. Christmas! I don't know. I feel like holidays are coming, and this type of music is just perfect for politics or for love,
yes,
or for whatever. Wonderful. Before Carol sang for us and called us, we were listening to Being in This World. We need to know a little bit more about this song with Art. And when did you write this one?
I wrote that in 1999, the year my son was born, and Art Garfunkel recorded. I wanted him to record with me. Paul Simon was my idol growing up, and I loved Simon and Garfunkel, and I interviewed both of them, and it was always my dream to record with Art Garfunkel, and he was so kind to do it. And he could have just come in and done it really quickly, but he spent hours to get it right, to learn my part.
Your voices are matching, and the harmonies are so beautiful.
He did a different harmony for every chorus. I mean, he really gave
it. That's why he is who he is.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy.
1999, that's what we say, the staying power of great song. Yeah. Beautiful, and many, many years later,
thank you.
It sounds so fresh and like...
We're gonna get to some politics and music in a minute, but I want to ask something. Let's call it the plight of the songwriter these days in terms of trying to have an income, which seems to have been pulled right out. I don't mean to such a downer, but to make a living as a songwriter these days due to the internet, due to streaming, due to Spotify and all these other people who made deals with the record companies but did not make deals with the artist. I know you don't have the answer, but what's going to happen? Where is this going? How do we get back on track for songwriters to be reimbursed for their work and their passion?
I wish I had the answer to that. That's an important question. It's one I can't answer, and I remain optimistic, but I might just be wishful thinking on my part. I know a lot of professional great songwriters who really aren't participating like they used to because they just don't see how it works anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand. I'm with BMI, and I got my BMI check yesterday. It doesn't add up much. You know,
the
compensation for play on internet radio really comes to nothing.
The zero, 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 1 cent.
Or, cents, you know. And Daryl's album had a lot of airplay, but it's not reflected the way it used to be. But the thing that gives me hope is that people don't stop writing songs. People are going to keep writing songs no matter what, and people still want songs. You know, with all the technology and the way the business has changed and the way we hear music and listen to it, they haven't replaced the song. They haven't come up with anything better that we should be listening to. I mean, people are listening to podcasts, and there's other things to listen to. But songs still have a meaning in people's lives as much now as ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope. And as far as songwriters making a living, that's a whole other challenge that I'm hopeful will change. I know people like Paul Williams and Ask Kep are working for it to become more fair, and I'm hoping we can make that change.
Songwriters have great power, had immense power in the 60s and 70s. I mean, the Dylans, and some we don't even know that well, but wrote songs that were so very important. We actually played Fixin' to Die Rag by Country Joe, two or three shows ago, and we kept the F-U-C-K chant in there, and that's just one that came to mind. But there's complaints from writers, not songwriters, but journalists, I guess, about people are not writing songs about the times, and they're not trying to present. The turmoil that's going on, it doesn't have the voice it used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of writers that are, I mean, there seem to be a lot of writers that are writing about it, but not the major writers who could get the message across. Is that an accurate?
Yeah, you know, frankly, I haven't heard much about it. I think a lot of artists are still in shock. I think that's part of it. It's a hard thing to deal with. It was one thing when Bush was there, when Nixon, and the opposition was easier to understand. This is just calling into question the nature of truth and reality and all the basic American principles that we've fought for, that those of us on the left have sung about and been sung to about for years. They're all kind of reinvented in some ways. So I think it's a confusing time for songwriters, and how you approach this and deal with it in song is a dilemma. The only way I could do it was kind of with irony. That's the only thing I've come up with. I've heard a few people. Marty Axelrod is a friend of mine, wrote a great song, and Peter Mulvey. Randy Newman wrote a song about the president, but he didn't put it on his album. He left it off. It was just mostly vulgarities.
Oh.
Well, that's a comment. That's a legitimate comment.
It is legitimate. I don't know if it's effective, but it's real.
Well, we're going to listen to a tune tonight that nobody's ever heard before, except the people involved in writing it and recording it.
And we are so
And it's got to be political because the song is called Gonna Build a Wall. It's got to be political, right? Is that your message in there? And maybe you can quote some lines before we listen that might be helping get the word out.
Well, the song grew out of when our president was still campaigning, and he came up with that idea of we're going to build a wall. And I was just amazed that that was something he was using in the 21st century. When, as you know, the Russians are using cyber, you know, attacks and stuff. He wants to build a wall, which is ancient technology, you know? And for a problem that doesn't exist, he was inventing the problem that immigrants are pouring over the border, and yet it was really effective. It showed me how important a physical symbol is, certainly in a song. Mm-hmm. And I was also thinking, you know, if they are going to build the wall, they're going to need some people to sing for the wall builders. So maybe there'll be some gigs for us. So this song, I didn't really calculate it. It kind of came out, but it's called Gonna Build Us a Wall. And it was intended as irony, though I don't know if everyone took it that way, but it started to take on and reflect all the things he was saying and kind of my amazement at why building a wall would bring so much comfort and excitement to so many Americans to the extent that they would vote for this guy, and he's currently our president. So it's reflecting that, and I'll tell you, I was a little worried that it would just be out of date already, because things are changing quickly.
Right.
And even recently he's been saying, well, maybe not a wall, but we're going to strengthen a lot of the fences and stuff, which not quite the same thing, but so I'm glad he's still talking about
it. So it's topical.
Yeah.
So for the first time ever, we're going to listen to Paul Zollo singing Gonna Build Us a Wall.
On Accent on Premiere, world premiere.
Beep, beep.
Yes, yay! Gonna build us a wall.
America's burning, boy, is just side on CNN. Terrorists shoot up our streets, then they do it all again. Right where City Hall once stood is now a taco stand. And refugees keep pouring in like locusts on the land. Illegals like tequila flow over our boundaries. Children ripen here like fruit from avocado trees. Most of them are fugitives, bad hombres, thugs and thieves, stealing all our jobs, rounding up our lives. Gonna build us a wall, make it strong and high. Build us a wall, clear up to the sky, in the home of the brave, land of the free. Gonna build us a wall, from sea to shining sea. We need to take America, make her great again. 'Cause our cities, all our war zones now of gangs and homeless men. Haunted empires of ruins just like ancient Rome. And ever since the factories are closed, ain't nobody home. Radicals and rapists come with heroin and crack. So now we got a president who's gonna get our country back. While I hide in the Ozarks with my Bible and my gun, in case ISIS comes to Arkansas, starts killing everyone. Gonna build us a wall all along the USA. Build us a wall and make Mexico pay. As we all say adios to every deportee. Gonna build us a wall from sea to shining sea. Gonna build us a wall. Gonna build us a wall. America, America, God shed his grace on thee. Now we need a rewrite on the Statue of Liberty. 'Cause we no longer want your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. So please don't send your homeless tempest tides to me. Please don't send your homeless tempest tides to me. Gonna build us a wall bigger than Berlin. We'll keep Mexico out and America in the home of the brave, the land of the free. Gonna build us a wall to see the shining sea. Gonna build us a wall in the rocket's red glare. Make America great with bombs bursting in air. We all know this land was made for you and me. Build us a wall from sea to shining sea. Gonna build us a wall. Gonna build us a wall. Gonna build us a wall.
That song needs to be heard.
Thank you.
It just needs to be heard.
How obvious, you cannot stop listening to your words, to your lyrics. They come out like the wave of your thoughts, and you said that song was written in time of election, and now we are like 7-8 months after.
Yeah.
Are you calmer or are you more scared?
I don't think it's gonna. I don't think it's gonna last to the end of his presidency. But he's still doing a whole bunch of harm, you know. And that's very offensive to me. I mean, we're talking. You're Polish, and as I mentioned, my grandfather came here from Poland with a different name. It was Zlotnik. Okay, it wasn't easy to come to America. They changed their name. At the time, it was better to pretend that we got an Italian name instead of a Polish name. But they came to America, and America allowed them in. And this idea that we don't want to let people in anymore
is
deeply offensive to the American spirit that we were raised with as American kids. That was the heart of what we were taught. This land is your land. You know?
That's true. But is this not an issue also that in the moment when people are here, they're supposed to be somehow somewhere taken care of, and letting them for so many years to just hide, really, and not feeling like they have right to become?